This is Windy City Sports Talk, hosted by Will Hatzel. Windy City Sports Talk features all the latest news and in-depth analysis for the Bears,
the Bear,
Bulls,
the Bulls,
Blackhawks, Cubs,
holy cow,
and White Sox.
You can put it on the board, yes!
It's time to talk Windy City Sports. What's up, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of Windy City Sports Talk. Do you know what we're going to sit down and talk about today? Yep, you guessed it, the Bears and how the suck train continues. And my buddy Zach Kyleman from the Gridiron Gallery podcast joins me again for yet another vent session on this Bears team who are losers of three straight games, but are winners in terms of consistency on playing the same crappy offense and using the same crappy game plan for what, 9 straight weeks now? Anyways, let's bring in Zach. Zach, how are you doing, bud?
Man, it's like we're all Nostradamus right now with how the Bears offense is. I'm just numb, Will. I am just numb. There's really no description anymore for the feelings I have for watching a loathsome Bears offense tread itself onto the field and just disappointedly go through the motions during games anymore. And I don't know what to say when you get, you know, pretty much excuses after excuses in post-game press conferences that really don't add up to answers. So you know what? I'm just kind of numb. I'm just sitting here just kind of going, it is what it is. We can't really do much about it.
I just really can't believe that they're going to probably blow a fantastic start to the season. Going 5-1, and I've said this a million times, so I'm probably annoying you, and I know I'm annoying everybody when I bring this up again, but that those first 6 games were crucial. It was the easiest part of the schedule. They even beat a couple of good teams. I mean, Tampa was an impressive win. The Lions, they're showing that they are kind of a formidable opponent, so that turns out to be an impressive win. It's just like, I really just can't believe, and it doesn't matter what era of the NFL we're in here with the Bears, whether it's the Lovie Smith era, Mark Trestman as a coach, John Fox, or even the 90s or even the 80s, for that matter, it's always been a great defense, and it's just they can't seem to figure it out on offense. And I think it's time for people to start admitting something, but I'm not going to say what it is just yet because we'll get to it. We'll get to it in a matter of time. But before we get the ball rolling, as always, I like to have my guests plug whatever work or whatever show, podcast, whatever it is that they do. So I'm going to give you that moment here, Zach. Feel free to let the listeners know what you got cooking with Gridiron Gallery, and then we'll start this vent session.
All right. Yeah. Took a break last week with Gridiron Gallery. Just needed to reset myself, but that's mainly because I'm setting up with some new equipment. Got a nice, custom built PC here. So we're gonna be doing a lot more stuff with the podcast in particular, maybe some video. I don't know. Just kind of gauging that. But if you want to find the podcast, give you some routes, you can do that. Check it out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go, of course, to, other major podcast sources, any of the ones that you can think of off the top of your head. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be on it. So check that out. And then on social media, you know, make sure to follow the podcast. It's at ZK Podcast, either on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And yeah, we're going to be doing some more NFL coverage with Zach, Tony, and Grimberg this week, getting back in the swing of things. And I do have a little bit of some arena football content coming up, hopefully within 2 weeks as well. But, you know, a lot of stuff going on in the world of football. Obviously, plenty to talk about with Chicago itself, but you know, plenty more to talk about league-wide. But right now, it's time for the number 2 count of our Rage Fest sessions. Am I right, Will? I mean, I think it's number 2.
Yeah.
At least compared to last one, it's definitely
well,
number 2.
That's if we don't count the quite a few that I think we had last year. Last season, I know you were on, back when this was a internet radio show, we were on a lot of times talking about a lot of different issues because that was another season they blew last year. They were, I mean, I want to say even offensively, maybe they're a little bit better this year just in terms of, okay, they already have, you know, over half the amount of wins they had compared to last year. Not that that's saying a lot. I'm compensating for a lot of suckiness. That's for sure. I can't, you know, lie about that. However, it's frustrating because you look at, we'll start with Sunday's game against Tennessee. It's a close game. It was, well, it should have been more of a close game than the, even the score indicated at the end. In terms of the defense, kept Tennessee at bay. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, 10 for 21 passing. Derrick Henry didn't really have a great game. They fed him the ball a lot. They used actually really tried the ground and pound the Bears, and there were a couple of successful plays, but for the most part, the defense held their own. But you look at the offense, and they just, again, they can't sustain drives. They get to the red zone. What do they do that first drive? They get in the red zone. They go for it on a short fourth in whatever situation. They don't capitalize. And then they're not even in the red zone until when? Like the second half of the game. And then David Montgomery with that fumble. I'm glad to see Nick Foles didn't really make a lot of mistakes in terms of turnovers. But the guy just doesn't know how to throw the ball out of bounds. You know, now we're getting intentional grounding calls. Now we're just throwing the ball so low to a wide receiver or tight end's feet, and it's either hitting the ground before the pass catcher could catch it, or you know, something else happens. So it's just a mess. And really, I just want to get your thoughts on the game against Tennessee. I thought it was a winnable game, despite Tennessee probably being the better team. I'm actually very disappointed and shocked that the offense was this pitiful again. What did you think?
Well, it was a winnable game, Will. I mean, the first drive for the Chicago Bears was arguably one of the best scripted opening drives that Matt Nagy's had all season. Deep into Tennessee territory, you're driving within, I think they were at roughly a 25-yard line when they had that fourth and one that they were going to go for. And fourth and one, you know, for most teams with a decent offensive line that aren't dealing with either COVID issues or just lack of health, you know, sure, maybe a dive play up the middle, you do get that 1 yard with David Montgomery, but, you know, that's not the play you call there, Will. And I saw that way too many times during the course of this contest. You had a lot of dive plays, a lot of plays that I think were not playing to the strengths of what the team has, which quite frankly, I mean, look, all things aside, you know, they were ravaged by COVID-19 this week on the interior, and I will give them slight slack for that. But still, you know, playing consistently poor linemen like Rashad Coward in there, who for some reason cannot seem to grasp basics of offensive line play. I mean, this is a guy that's firing off the ball with his head down. That is peewee style coaching that you shouldn't be having to do that in the NFL. And this guy is getting blown off the ball because he doesn't have his head up. Or one of the biggest defenses was on actually that shovel pass play that they had for Allen Robinson. It was late in the third quarter. They were finally in the red zone, I think the first time, as you mentioned. And you have Jermaine Ifedi and Rashad Coward having to go for a double team, and you have them both whiff on the double team. I mean, line play is, in my opinion, where it starts. Now, there's been argument that maybe it's maybe QB play. But quite frankly, one of the reasons Nick Foles is backpedaling or sputtering or seems to be nervous every time is because how do you trust that offensive line, quite frankly? Now, could you switch it to Mitch and maybe that helps? Sure, but then you have to deal with Mitch being even more inconsistent and panicky once he can't get his first read off. So, you know, you tell me about that. The line is where it all starts, though, and that also leads into Matt Nagy not understanding his personnel. Again, that fourth and one, the first drive of the game, why are you calling that dive play? If it's fourth and one, you need to find some sort of play action or something that is at least a misdirection of sorts when it comes to getting that 1 yard. Don't make it a basic play like that, because that line is not designed right now, at least with the COVID-19 reserve list, the way it was, to take on Tennessee. Now, they should have been able to keep up. If they would have finished that drive in the way that first half was playing, this should have definitely been as competitive and more of a down-to-the-wire game than more of a snooze fest with, you know, some sort of 17 points on the board at the end of the game. But, man, I'm telling you, you know, it's disappointing seeing how that looked like there were a few leaps, at least a few strides made against New Orleans, and then to go into Tennessee and lay what I would say is the worst offensive performance that the Bears have had this year. You can argue that the LA Rams were worse, but to come out and be what I would say is the worst performance on offense this season after what the defense did against a run-heavy Tennessee Titans squad with the leading rusher in the NFL and holding Ryan Tannehill to 10 passes, 10 completions at least for that contest. Give me a break. I mean, come on. What are we doing, Will? That's all I'm saying. What are we doing to waste again a championship defense on the on just something that is not being grasped on the offensive side of the ball, whether it is Coach Nagy, whether it is Nick Foles, you know, not being in instead of Mitch. It's just it's something, you know, it's depressing and numbing.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the offensive line issues, I guess most of it you can't really blame Nagy, the coaching staff, any of these guys that much. I mean, I will say, and I did mention this last week when we talked last, when, you know, I've been the one thing I've been critiquing Ryan Pace about, okay, I'm over the fact about the pick and Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and, you know, Patrick Mahomes. We have this discussion every week of every season for the last, like, 3 years. You know, it is what it is. It's always going to be tarnished on the legacy of the Bears, especially, you know, Ryan Pace's tenure here as the manager of the Bears. However, you know, it's not Pace's fault that there's COVID issues. It's not his fault that there's injuries. But in a way, there's no excuse that you don't have the proper depth then, because, you know, football being one of the, you know, the likeliest sports to have an injury occur and have so many pile up at a time. Well, here you are. You're in a total state of chaos with instability on the line, because you're down three starters. One's out for the season, and James Daniels, Bobby Massey's probably going to miss a couple of weeks. Still, Cody Whitehair, they haven't really given a timetable for his return. Could miss a few more weeks. Who knows? Maybe we'll find out more this week when the injury report gets updated, as they start, you know, looking ahead to next Monday's matchup against the Vikings, which, great, there's another chance for national TV embarrassment. But at the end of the day, when it comes to Nick Foles, because if you're not complaining about Matt Nagy, what's the second topic you're talking about with this offense? It's quarterback play. It's the magnifying glasses on the coach and then the quarterback play. So many people are, like, done with Foles all of a sudden. I'm like, okay, Mitchell Trubisky's played over three seasons in a Bears uniform. How many more chances does he deserve? How many more opportunities does he deserve? Because when I look at Foles, the completion percentage is a lot better, 65% compared to Mitch's 59%. And I understand Mitch played in three games, I should say. The fourth game was that one run play against the Saints last week. And Foles has played in seven games. But he's got more passing yards, almost the same amount per play. You know, the interceptions and the sacks, I think, have been the most frustrating thing with him. But that's the offensive line. And I think what Foles has to realize, and I wish Nagy's going to have to pull him to the side and say, look, the offensive line's ravaged, and I can't do nothing for you about that. The running game is really hit or miss, mostly a miss. You're going to have to learn to either get out of that pocket quicker, throw the ball quicker, or you got to make quicker decisions regardless of the situation, whether it's running with the ball, throwing it away, something. You can't hold on to the ball, take a sack, fumble it, or enough with the forcing plays too. You just have to be prepared that you're going to get sacked and you're going to be pressured on almost every play now, because you have a bunch of practice squad and depth guys starting on your offensive line. And you still are going to be playing against some premier defenses, some premier pass rushers. You know, maybe we're not facing Aaron Donald again, but there's still going to be some tough teams out there that you have to play. So, everybody that's saying, oh, it's time to put Trubisky in. No, I'm really not about that, because I don't know. I don't think, why does he deserve another chance? Foles hasn't been playing great, but there's so much to compile into the struggles of this offense. It's not all on Foles, and a lot of it falls on the Foles because of all these other issues that we continue to talk about every week, with play calling and offensive line issues and no running game. So what do you think? Do you think Mitch deserves another chance, or do you think we need to stick with Foles? Because the odds are, I think Foles is probably going to be here next year and Trubisky's not.
To me, this is a harder question than it is on Twitter. Look, if you go on Twitter and you go on Bear and you browse Bears Twitter, which you and I both have, and I have conversations with the usual people. You've commonly had Drew. I'm going to say this wrong. Is it Drew Cool? Is that who it is?
Oh, Drew Cool from Sports Mockery.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, Drew Cool. I talk a lot with another person that associates with him is Lucas Perlini. I think that's how you pronounce it. You know, but you have a lot of these guys. You have either, in my opinion, you have Bears fans that I think just are very reactionary, and it's, you know, any quick swap is a magic wand wave, and it instantly fixes a QB problem. And I think it more and more, like, just with the Mitch Trubisky era, the way it has been, and watching, again, we keep bringing this up, Watson and Mahomes. You know, we watch them and give credit. You know, Houston is in the doldrums, but Watson's the only thing that is carrying that team right now anyway. And, you know, I think it's just that people get frustrated so much with some of us were brought up to say that Nick Foles was the savior, you know, and that keeps getting brought up. It's like Nick Foles was, you know, whether you listen to WSCR, you read on, you know, say the Chicago Sun-Times or something like that, somehow, and I know that was what obviously Nagy and Pace mentioned in press conferences coming in, you know, people bought in that he was the savior. If Mitch Trubisky failed, Nick Foles waves a magic wand and the offense is fixed. And I just sat there reading this, and, you know, others probably did too. You might have been as well, I think, when we have talked about this. I never thought that. I mean, come on. Nick Foles, to me, is more of a bridge quarterback than a savior quarterback. He has that Super Bowl MVP, but you also have to give him the assets around him to succeed. And one of the biggest things that he needs, as we have seen, he needs an offensive line that is stable. That's what he had in Philadelphia when they went on and won Super Bowl 52. You know what Chicago doesn't have? There is no stability in offense this year. And he's still on for another year. I thought he was in an opt-out next year. No, he's going to be on next year, and they're going to probably use him again. I imagine if Pace gets his chance, he's going to help build the line. And for Mitch, I'm done watching him. I'm quite frankly, I've seen that, like you're saying, I've seen the 3+ years. I know what I'm going to get from the guy. I'm not going to suspect that if we put him in, there's a magic wand that's gets waved around the offense, and all of a sudden Mitch fixes it. It's not going to happen. And I know that we've seen these stats with, when it comes to, like, say, Fox, of course, has shown, you know, Mitch versus Nick Foles with the record, you know, or the statistics. Look, first off, on Sunday, they put Mitch as 3-0. And I understand he started the Atlanta game, but come on, they were going to lose to the Falcons if you don't put Foles in. So he would have been most likely 2-1 if he keeps that start. It really should be 2 wins. Second off, we're talking about the other people that bring up the run game issue. Again, that's fine. I understand that you have a quarterback that can do an option, but quite frankly, healthier line back then as well. It was weaker opponents that are susceptible to the run game, mind you. And quite frankly, you know, if you want to judge it, I mean, like I said, you win against LA, New Orleans, and Tennessee. Tennessee, yes, I will say their defense is garbage. And the fact that Chicago put up those numbers, it was terrible. But I mean, I don't really think I agree with even putting Trubisky in. I'm done seeing him, honestly. And I know that people want to see him back, and there's some that hold out hope that he will maybe take the reins and continue and possibly show growth. But I don't see it, man. And quite frankly, I'm just numb with it. I'm like, for me, whoever wins, wins. If you want to put Mitch in, sure. But I could care less if he gets another chance, quite frankly. I'm good.
And what was said earlier this year, like around springtime when free agency was happening and, you know, the Bears made the move to acquire Foles from the Jaguars. Okay. What was talked about was how huge it should have been, how of a big deal it was to acquire him, because he has familiarity with Nagy's system from Kansas City. The offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, was Foles' quarterback's coach with the Eagles. Quarterbacks and the current quarterback's coach, which is John DeFilippo, was the quarterback coach in Philadelphia for him and was even the offensive coordinator with him in Jacksonville. Now, I know he hardly played because he missed the vast majority of the season due to injury, but, you know, still being around probably and in the, you know, looking at the playbook and being around in the film room and whatnot with the rest of the offense and especially the quarterbacks and the coaching staff for the quarterbacks and the offense in general. I mean, not like Foles just, you know, took a vacation. I mean, he's still with the team. He still heard things and whatnot. So all this familiarity with the coaching staff and Foles and the vast completely different places they've been and where they've been more successful with these other teams rather than the Bears. And nothing's working. And is it all Nagy because maybe he's not getting the input from the other guys? I don't know. I hate to make those assumptions. I don't like assuming things when I'm not in the locker room and I'm not there every day and part of the discussions and the game planning and whatnot. But I really thought maybe it was going to make more sense to have Foles because he's going to know what the heck these guys want to play in terms of their style of offense.
But, you know, Will, I got to stop you here because you mentioned that with Foles. So here's something that was brought up, and you might remember Monday Night Football with the Rams, Brian Griese. Now, it was that conversation that supposedly Foles mentioned that Nagy gives him plays and he doesn't know if he has enough time for it. We've known that Foles likes to hurry up the offense. Nagy doesn't like that. And it seems like there's still a disconnect because Matt Nagy, I think, is so obsessed with personnel sometimes. I mean, is that, to me, I wonder, like, is that what it is? Like, should we simplify some things? You know, because, like I said, Foles really has been wanting to do this hurry up mentality. Like, there's been some games we've seen him on the sideline try and hurry up and off, do hurry up offense. And all of a sudden, it's like Nagy hits the brake or the emergency brake to say, hang on now. I got some plays that'll work, and they don't work. And then you see Foles and him kind of get at least into a bit of a conversation, not heated, but Foles is trying to make a point at times. I mean, I'm wondering, you know, should it be hurry up? Like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, why don't we emphasize some hurry up if Foles' expertise is on that? And it also helps with offensive line because it backs off any pass rush.
Well, I'll tell you why here in a second, why I don't think it works, because I think it's, I'm going to be asking everybody that's a Bears fan to finally admit this. And I'm going to ask you this too. And I think I know what your response is going to be. So, but before I just want to bring up real quick, cause we were talking a second ago about, you know, who's going to be around next year. Is it Foles? Is it Trubisky? Yeah. You know, they declined Trubisky's option. So the odds are he's not going to be here anymore. So logically, it makes sense, I think, to continue with Foles to try to figure it out, see what works, because like you mentioned, he's going to be here next year. And actually, per CBS Sports, when they reported the Bears acquiring Foles, they also restructured his contract. And I want to make sure people remember this, because everybody, and this is where I'll defend Ryan Pace, everybody critiques the Bears for trading for Foles. You know, the $88 million quarterback. Okay, before you say that, remember, Foles restructured his deal for 3 years and $24 million. Obviously, some incentives, but $21 million of that is guaranteed, and he'll make about $8 million per season under this deal. Okay, after this year, he still technically has two more years. However, there's something in the contract that states that based on performance, he could void the 2021 and 2022 seasons based on performance. Now, he ain't exactly performing well, so he's not really going to probably have the ability to seek more money. I don't know exactly what that states. The article just kind of sums it up pretty quickly. But the odds are he's not really going to have any room to be like, hey, you know, to actually up my money, which is probably a good thing, because I don't want to really invest any more money into Foles. I want to focus on drafting a quarterback in the offseason, and hopefully maybe Foles is the bridge quarterback for one or two more years, and then we throw in this next guy if hopefully he's the freaking answer. But I just want to throw that in real quick, because again, that's why I think it makes sense that Foles stays as the quarterback, because he's probably going to be here and be in charge for the foreseeable future, even beyond this season. I'd be shocked if they got rid of him. I'd be shocked if he's not starting at least at the beginning of next year, because what are their options at this point? But Zach, I want to ask you this, and I want to ask this really to all the listeners and everybody that's a Bears fan. And even if you're listening to this, ask your family and friends that are Bears fans too. Can we finally admit that the Bears have no playmakers on offense outside of Allen Robinson? Can we admit that David Montgomery isn't exactly all that as what we hope him to be? Can we admit that this offensive line isn't worth the money? Now, everybody criticizes the line, so I get that. But can we admit finally that the tight ends, it ain't working out? The wide receivers, it ain't working out? You watch A.J. Brown play against the Bears, the wide receiver that was tearing up the Bears defense on Sunday. That guy alone would catch the ball, and he himself would make five Bears defensive players miss tackles. Also, that diving touchdown catch he had, that's playmaking ability. You tell me, Zach, is there anybody on that Bears offense can do what you see on NFL Red Zone or when you watch highlights from games at, you know, at the end of, on Sunday night or in between halftime shows and whatnot? Who on the Bears is a playmaker, honestly?
Well, besides Allen Robinson, best guess after that, I would say, is probably Jimmy Graham. But again, he is on the back end of his career. He's made some nice plays this year for us. But, you know, you're absolutely right. It's a conversation that's come up. Look, the line has not been really tooled as much, and this is what we've been given. Darnell Mooney, I think is overpromised. I think that they want him to be something that he's not ready to be yet, and he's also not the size to be the number two that they want. And Anthony Miller, I mean, I still, every week I scratch my head with the guy. I don't understand if he is going to, what is Anthony Miller at this point? You know, he was supposed to be the number two moving forward. He every week seems to either disappear or he has stretches where you go, wow, that's pretty cool. I wonder if he'll continue to do that. And he never does. You know, not to mention you add in, of course, the locker room issues he has where apparently he has some attitude problems. I'm not saying it's all his fault for that. I'm just saying that that's something that has come up in the past. And you add that into the inconsistent play, you know, you wonder if that all combines into something that's just a mess. Jimmy Graham really is the only one I can say that maybe fits that category. We haven't seen enough of Cole Kmet. And luckily, statistically, Kmet has had more snaps that he's been involved with. But now it comes to actually using him and still haven't seen enough of him. And yeah, that's about it. David Montgomery, it's hard for me to grasp on Montgomery, too, because, you know, the offensive line. But I would also argue that I've seen a lot of times where I think there's a hole for Montgomery and he doesn't read the hole correctly. And that's just with a TV view, in my opinion. So, yeah, it's really maybe just Jimmy Graham. And I don't even know if you agree with that, Will. But just for some of the plays he's made this year, that's the only reason I can say that he even gets that nod. I mean, Allen Robinson really is the Bears offense, if you think about it, that is consistent enough. And what bothers me about that, too, is that we're still in a contract issue with him to where it's looking more and more likely that we might have to wait till the offseason where it's, you know, basically at the buzzer if we're going to even re-sign and give him an extension. There's talks we might not even give him money just because we want to save some cap. I'm worried about that. You know, if we don't have playmakers now besides Robinson and Robinson leaves, what in God's name is the Bears offense after that? Because if this is the lowest of lows, no, it's not that. We haven't gotten there. But, you know, I cannot imagine having to take him away because even focusing on, say, Mooney as being a number two, which he really is number two at this point, he's still not ready to be, I would say, elevated to any star level. He's serviceable. Man, and it hurts me to see that because it's not going to get much better right now. You have to ride it out until we even get to the offseason. And again, there's no guarantees there. It's just, this is what we have, Will. This is what we have. I do want to ask you, though. Ryan Nall, I thought, had some solid plays against Tennessee. You mentioned David Montgomery. Nall was pretty good, I thought. Sometimes I wonder if Matt Nagy maybe doesn't use his personnel correctly or over-underestimates his personnel. Because, I mean, is that an example? Am I crazy?
I'm going to ask you to repeat that here in a second because I'm going to forget. But let me just interject real quick about Allen Robinson. And I'm sorry because I have Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey in my mind right now because I'm going to refer to them real quick. I think it's really looking like there's going to be a divorce between the Bears and Allen Robinson because his production has still been pretty good. But I don't know. It's something seems weird. Like he's not their go-to guy right now. The body language on the sideline has been kind of shaky, and I don't blame him. We know the antics on with the whole rumor mill of him getting traded or requesting a trade on social media, him taking all his Bears stuff down off of social media. It doesn't appear that he wants to be here anymore, and I'm starting to sense that maybe that Ryan Pace, that is, he himself doesn't want to deal with what's happening because Brandon Marshall, who was kind of a troublemaker in the locker room, as soon as Pace got hired, that was one of his first moves is he traded him to the Jets. Alshon Jeffrey I can't remember. I probably need to look it up, but I'm pretty sure Alshon Jeffrey went like the following year. Like, he didn't stick around too long. Maybe he played one or two seasons, but, and I know Jeffrey wanted to leave, but there was some, you know, bad blood there at the end too. So when there's bad blood, Ryan Pace doesn't really want to keep guys around, I don't think. So I'm telling you right now that I believe that after this season, Alshon Jeffrey, see, now I'm switching them up, Allen Robinson will not be in a Bears uniform. So I just want to throw that out there while I'm looking up the dates of all this stuff. But can you ask that again? Because I want to answer that for you.
Well, that's what I'm trying to ask here. First off, I'm going to comment on Robinson because I'm going to say that that Pace put that on himself. You want to talk about drama? I think Pace did that when he didn't give him an extension in the offseason like I thought he should have. So that's my honest opinion on that, and you can answer that if you like. My question was, do you think Matt Nagy sometimes doesn't read his personnel correctly or over or underestimates what they're good for? Because I know it was it was basically semi-garbage time post David Montgomery going to concussion protocol, but Ryan Nall was able to catch all the passes he needed to, and he looked good in open space. And I know that he is definitely more of a decisive runner than David Montgomery. So that was my question was, is he an example of Matt Nagy maybe not understanding his personnel, much like, you know, how Cole Kmet seems to not get as much snap count, much of a snap count, or maybe the line being undervaluated or not changing out pieces in the correct fashion? That was my question.
I think deep down inside, Nagy knows what he's got in his players, and he better. 9 games into the season, you should know what you have in your team. Who's your reliable guys? Who are your go-to guys in clutch situations? And who is, and who, which guys aren't? Now, like we just talked about, there's not a whole lot of playmakers and guys you could heavily rely on. However, what I think the problem is, there's two issues that I think Nagy's going through is, one, he doesn't, and I don't know if this is just stubbornness with the type of play calling or with the game plan, like what he wants to call in these games, but he doesn't call the right plays or the right routes that best enhances his player's ability. Darnell Mooney and Anthony Miller, they're fast. They play they could play anywhere out on the outside in the slot. We saw against the Saints, Anthony Miller, probably his best game of the season, running slant routes, being a reliable target and getting first downs and making some big plays, especially late in that game when the Bears were playing resilient and, you know, got it to overtime. Darnell Mooney, unfortunately, we can't throw the deep ball properly. I wish they would be able to get that, but Darnell Mooney should be able to catch more than 3 passes a game. He should be targeted more. He should be able to catch more passes. Anthony Miller should be targeted more and catch more passes. They don't utilize these guys the right way. Allen Robinson is really the only guy you can send down the field and throw a jump ball for him to go up and catch, because Mooney, they have to separate from the safety or the cornerback guarding them, and you got to hope that there's enough separation and the ball's thrown perfectly to where they could just reach out their hands and grab it. They're not big guys. They don't have big, you know, your second biggest receiver is Cordero Patterson, who doesn't even play as a wide receiver. So I think it's just a lack of not giving these guys a chance in the type of plays and type of roles that they're good at. And Cole Kmet, I think, is just simply that stupid stereotypical stance of, well, he's a rookie, he has to earn his playing time. How is he supposed to earn anything when you don't even give him a chance on the field? That's what upsets me is, you know, Jimmy Graham, I don't consider him a playmaker, Zach. I just consider him a reliable target. But he's also had some bad drops. He's also inconsistent at times, but he's the best target we have in the red zone, and kudos to him with that. He's had 2 really good games where he's caught a lot of passes for over 60 yards, but he's got, I believe, 5 touchdowns on the year, probably leading the team in receiving touchdowns, which is cool. But Cole Kmet, 6 receptions on 8 targets for 79 yards and a touchdown? That's ridiculous. Cordero Patterson has more catches and more targets. It doesn't make sense to me. And that's why I always scratch my head with the Ted Ginn signing, which he got released last week. But I never understood that signing when you have to give opportunities to Mooney, to Miller, to, you know, Javon Wims. I know he's in the coach's dog, Javon Wims, Riley Ridley, two of your young receivers. You can't groom or develop these guys if they're not on the field playing, if they're not getting a chance to play and prove it to your to you. So until Nagy starts calling plays around what his players' best skill sets are, what they're best, what they're prone to do well in, you're not going to see them perform. And then you got to get rid. It got to not be the stereotypical coach. Well, Cole Kmet can only go in like 50% of the snaps because he's a rookie. It ain't like Jimmy Graham's 10 times better than him. It's not like Cole Kmet's fifth on the depth chart. He's number two. So this is why people want to strangle Matt Nagy, because it's kind of, to me, it's like common sense, Zach, because me and you could sit here and talk about this stuff and figure it out. And Matt Nagy, it's, you know, it's the same response every week, you know, in the press conferences on Zoom or whatever after games. We'll look at the film. We have to do better. We'll evaluate the play calling ability. It's the same thing every week. And he did this last year, and I got pissed at him last year because he said he was so repetitive every week about how they're working on Trubisky and his struggles. So, and actually that's what I want to ask you next is just, what are your thoughts on Nagy's responses? Are you getting tired of it? Do you think he's being honest? What do you think?
It's bland, and it's coming off anymore that it's just to basically fill a question anymore. He, like this past week, he was upset, of course, with the line play. Okay, I get that. But again, you were down three potential starters for what's available. You know, I just, anymore, the press conferences with Matt Nagy, I'm less and less interested because nothing new comes up anymore. As I kind of jabbed in there while you were talking, you know, it's kind of Trestman-like. It just is filler, and it just gets you through the press conference. And I understand you're not supposed to release everything, but my God, I mean, it's starting to become repeated conversations. Like what do you tell the press at this point when you're talking about the offense being as slacking as you are? Cause basically the last two weeks, I'd argue, they have been asking him, are you going to give up play calling? And he keeps trying to dodge it, but it's a legitimate question. And I'm starting to get disinterested in his conferences because to me, nothing really seems to be answered, and nothing I don't think is being changed right now. So, yeah, it just, like I said, it comes off as Trestman-like because it just, you know, you fill in an answer, it gets it out of the way, you know, and we just sit here as Bears fans getting more and more frustrated and nothing happens, you know, but it doesn't really reveal what his mentality is. I don't understand the mentality of the man sometimes and the decisions he makes. And it keeps getting more irritating when you just kind of, you know, toss up a lame press conference and a few answers to questions that just, you know, they just fill in the sheet and nothing else is really said there.
So it appears the bandwagon calling for the firing of Nagy and Pace is getting bigger. Where do you stand on that? Are you on the side of the road or are you chasing after the wagon?
I'm at the bus stop debating if I want to get on, is kind of how it is. I'm imagining one of those tailgate buses at Soldier Field that I'm just kind of seeing if it's going to stop nearby. I am not fully committed to saying, let's just get rid of both of them, because I think, you know, you still can say, well, hey, he's a really good locker room. And I'm talking Matt Nagy here. Hey, Matt Nagy's a really good locker room guy and the players play for him, which is a good thing. I just want the guy to admit that maybe you should give over the play sheet and let someone else try out the play calling for a second before we start throwing him completely out of Chicago, or at least into Lake Michigan for him to swim away. I don't think that you should fire him yet. Now, if this keeps becoming a train wreck and we keep hearing the same repeated record over and over every week, then we might start having a discussion, which is strange considering that Adam Gase still has his job. And we're considering that Nagy is kind of coming close to hot seat territory too. What a weird world we live in, right? I would argue, though, you're more likely to see a situation where a GM's let go, you pull a GM in, and you see if he gets along with the coach this upcoming year, is how I feel it, you know? So kind of like how we had with Pace coming in during the John Fox era. We see how that works out, is in my opinion. I don't know if we're there yet as well. Again, if this continues to slide the way it is, if you lose to Minnesota in particular that's going to raise a lot of eyebrows, I think, because as you and me know, Matt Nagy has not lost to Minnesota or Detroit since he has been in Chicago. If he loses to Minnesota and you have to have the same discussion on national television, mind you, then we're going to start having to consider what might have to be the trajectory for these guys to be let go. I think Pace would be the first one out the door just because the most glaring issues are on his end when it comes to QB play and the offensive line. The offensive line, in my opinion, I will still say is the problem number one right now, with number two being the quarterback, but it's not really much of a divide, but that lays on the personnel you got that the GM pulled together. And if it keeps backsliding and these are the problems that keep showing up, you might just have that happen, but it's going to have to be consistently loss after loss after loss. I'm talking like the Bears finish like somewhere in like the 7-9 to 5-11 range to where we have that discussion. You know, if they get to 500 or plus, we punt it till next year. And if it continues, then we go into the talk of firing, in my opinion. But you know, you would have to have straight up a losing season to say, okay, at least one of these guys is going to be booted out of the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, I'm like you, Zach. I think I'm at the bus stop too, because I don't like firing a coach or a general manager or both unless there really does need to be big, like a total change of guard and change the team around. You know, some people want to blow this up, and I really don't want to. I don't really believe that you have to dismantle the defense to get extra draft picks and free up cap space. I mean, to be honest with you, if you have to pick and choose over re-signing some guys, like, okay, I like Tashaun Gibson, but if you can't re-sign him because you'd rather draft a guy or pick another guy up for a cheap one-year deal, I'm willing to do that because for the sake of spending more of your money on offense. But even if you had to let some guys go on defense, you got Robert Quinn locked up for a few more years. You got Khalil Mack locked up for a few more years. Eddie Jackson, Kyle Fuller, Jalen Johnson's going to be on that rookie deal for a couple of years before you have to worry about him. And he's looking like a promising future star player for this defense. Roquan Smith is probably going to be your biggest signing coming up next. You know, maybe you find a way to dump Danny Trevathan, because if he keeps playing like this, I don't think I want him around any longer, because he's been a disappointment this year. But at the end of the day, you're going to have a handful of defensive players you could build around and keep. And there's even a couple of guys, Roy Robertson Harris, Brent Urban, those guys you can sign for cheap 2-3 year deals to keep them around long term as well. So I don't really believe in blowing up this defense entirely. They may not be as dominant going forward because of the fact that they can't spend the money or focus that much on adding to that side of the ball, because they need offense, man. But you find a way to free up some money, maybe cut a few players, and then you attack the offense, improving the offense.
The line in particular.
Exactly. And they're going to end up getting another quarterback. There's no doubt about that. But at the end of the day, again, who's going to make those decisions at the end of the year? Are you going to keep Nagy and Pace around? People are going to break down my door and come tackle me and attack me for saying this, but I think I'm willing to go one more year because, I'm mad at Nagy and I'm mad at Pace, but it's time to admit that they just don't have enough it factor. They don't have those playmaking guys on that offense. Until they get that, they're always going to play like this. Because even if you call simple plays and just hand the ball off to a guy or throw a screen pass, they don't have the guys to make something out of nothing. So sometimes I think that affects your game plan and your play calling too. And maybe it makes Nagy look bad because the plays he's calling are teams do, but the Bears just don't have the guys. So I'm willing to give it one more shot with these guys. I think I'm going to let the wagon or the fire these guys bus go by. And, you know, I know you referred to something about being like at a tailgate or a parking lot or something. Well, let me tell you, I've seen some strange stuff in the Bears, the parking lots outside of Soldier Field. Usually I park in the McCormick place, but one time we had the park in one of the outside lots, and we walked after the game, we walked past this bus that was spray painted black. And either the windows were like spray painted or had some dark tint so you couldn't see inside. But it was written on the outside of the bus. It was called the Booty Bus. So I don't know what was going on in there. But I was maybe a little too young at the time to go find out. But Yeah, you got to be careful you're getting on the right bus or the right wagon in those parking lots, because you might be going in for some wild times depending on what you're hopping into. So just a fair warning if you ever decide to suffer and put yourself through the torture of watching the Bears in person one day when we're allowed to get back into having games.
You need a distraction from how bad the offense is. Got to have some other stuff to do when you're at the game if you're watching that.
I guess so. That was probably would have been more fun on the booty bus than going into the damn stadium. So.
Is that who's going to pick us up, the booty bus? The day that the firings come, I'll be at the bus stop waiting for the booty bus, Will.
Yeah, maybe I'll be the one driving it, saying, come on in, we're going to do we're gonna have fun and do some other things. This is ridiculous. Let the
suffering continue.
Seriously. But, where do we go from here? Well, you know what? I want to get your thoughts on that. Me talking about or me denying the fact that we should blow this up. Are you willing to blow up the entire team or willing to trade off some defensive players to maybe get some draft stock and free up some cap space?
I don't want to because I like what they have in particular. And considering that next year you'll get Eddie Goldman back, supposedly, you know, and I know Goldman, it's not all on Goldman for like, say, rushing woes, but like, just the fact that Goldman was also an essential piece and, you know, Jalen Johnson is an excellent second round pick that Pace has nailed on, which to give him credit, you know, Pace hasn't always screwed up. That's one of the pieces I will say, you know, knocked it out of the park with Jalen Johnson this year. But man, you know, if you blew that up, you know, I wouldn't want to. Now, I don't know, maybe, and this is based on if I don't see any better production, like, maybe if you wanted to, say, clear some cap by finding a suitor for Robert Quinn, if that's even a thing, you know, that's a big reason that some of the cap's taken up right there. Like Khalil Mack obviously is the, you know, the one that's taken up most of the cap space. I'm not getting rid of him. I still am not, you know, too much of a disruptor, too much of a player that can take over any game. You don't do it. Simple as that. You know, people say Trevathan, I don't know. It's hard. I think that maybe you could find a way there and work in a younger linebacker, but that's a decision that was screwed up, in my opinion, this past offseason. You would basically be admitting fault. I don't know if Pace would be able to say that he could do that without taking a shot to pride and also his credibility in the role. I wouldn't blow up the defense, quite frankly. I still think you have a championship defense. I wouldn't do it. I just want to see some way that you can retool and make this offense work, or at least get something else in there to help them work, which, you know, part of the reason why I say, and I know we would be cap stricken, but part of the reason why I say is, you know, to extend Allen Robinson is, yeah, you know, he's a little disgruntled right now, but again, you know, I think Pace brought this on himself when they didn't give him the contract, and he still puts up the numbers that give you the most success. That's where you need to find a way to work out, make some room, and maybe go for someone else that you can get to go alongside there. You know, otherwise it's, you know, blowing up the defense to me is not the solution is the short answer. You know, it's finding a way to retool this offense. You just don't do it with the caliber defense you have right now. It just, you can't, you just, I simply say you can't do it.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of with you on if you really did have to get rid of somebody and free up some money. I mean, maybe Robert Quinn. The only thing is, again, his value is going to be low because he's having a lackluster season and he's already like 30 years old and he's still guaranteed, you know, another 4 years and however much money's left on that $75 million deal. I don't know if I should hate on the guy and give up on him on one season, but I mean, stats are lame, man. He's got like 9 tackles this year. He's got 1 sack, 2.5 tackles for a loss, 2 forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery. This guy was supposed to be better than Leonard Floyd. This guy was supposed to be, you know, probably the second best pass rusher on the team. And I mean, geez, you got Akeem Hicks, a defensive tackle, with more sacks than him. I mean, Hicks only has 3.5, but, you know, I almost would rather see Roy Robertson Harris out there or, you know, Barkavius Mingo, who, again, the Bears haven't racked up a lot of sacks and a lot of turnovers this year. I mean, they only got 20 sacks, and honestly, trying to find, let's see, they got 5 interceptions, and nine forced fumbles, but they only recovered four. So essentially you got like nine turnovers this year. That ain't good. That's not a dominant. That's the one thing the defense isn't doing well. I mean, the only thing they've really been dominant in is not allowing a lot of scoring. So Robert Quinn, yeah, I mean, $75 million, man, that could definitely lock you up. Maybe you another lineman, a new lineman, and maybe either, again, re-signing Robinson if you can get past this year's problems. Or, you know, I've read some things about the Bears maybe targeting Chris Godwin in the offseason if Allen Robinson walks. And honestly, that might be a good – I think I can maybe live with that move because I don't know if Godwin's going to stay in Tampa because Mike Evans, Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Brown, I mean, they got so many weapons. If you want to be a true number one receiver and really get legitimate looks every week, game after game, I don't know if you're going to get that in Tampa if you're Chris Godwin. So some money for more playmakers and a better offensive line definitely would be key for that. So maybe we'll see. But honestly, I think I'm willing to even give Robert Quinn another chance because he was injured at the beginning of the year. Apparently, he's on some kind of snap count. So they're watching how many snaps he's out there for. I read something about that earlier today. I'm like, okay, he spent $75 million on the guy. Why is he on a snap count? If it's because he's injured, I understand. But it's like, okay, really? So as we wrap up here, Zach, two more questions for you. First off, you kind of hinted to that Minnesota game on Monday being huge in terms of maybe determining whether or not you keep Pace and Nagy. Do you think the Bears have a chance? Is it still, should that game should still be in the favor of the Bears, or do the Vikings have the edge because Dalvin Cook is essentially carrying the entire state of Minnesota on his back, not just the freaking Vikings, but maybe the whole state with how many yards he's been running for the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think the game plan that the Bears had against Tennessee is the same one that they could implement against Minnesota. Think about it. They shut down the leading rusher in the NFL in Derrick Henry. Dalvin Cook is right behind him and is one of the top five in rushing this year as well. If you implement, in my opinion, if you can implement the same defensive strategy against Minnesota and consistently, you know, the Bears have proven that we can get to Kirk Cousins and Kirk Cousins has not been well against Chicago. You know, if you shut down the run game, you have to force Kirk to basically win the game for you. And he doesn't often do that. I think that that game plan can work. The big wild card is always Will. What does the offense do? Because apparently a 10-point deficit is almost like basically out in the Badlands, and you're not going to be able to make it back to civilization anytime soon, or at least anywhere near trying to tie a game. So my question is, what does the offense do? Because the defense, in my opinion, last week showed exactly what they need to do against Minnesota. Now, if we're talking receiving core, I would be worried about that if you can't get pressure on Kirk Cousins, because Adam Thielen is still established and Justin Jefferson came out to play after an early slump in his rookie year, at least the first few weeks of the season. So those are the guys I worry about if Chicago can consistently shut down Dalvin Cook like they did with, of course, Derrick Henry. I mean, keep in mind, Henry and Cook have similar production and number of touches per game usually. So if he can shut Cook down and keep him within that, you know, that like 60-ish yard range that they did with Derek, that's your winning formula. And I mean, that's possible, but the offense is what needs to come to play. Minnesota is a young defense. They are susceptible. They have shown this year to being lackluster with protection. I just need to see enough protection for Nick Foles to where he can deliver enough decent plays to maybe squeak out a win similar to how the Tampa game played out. That's how I think this is going to come down to. You're going to have some sort of a game where it's going to be like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where the defense was disruptive enough. Nick Foles has to make enough plays and give enough time to where he can get to his playmakers, which, like I said, in my opinion, if it's not Allen Robinson, and I barely say it's Jimmy Graham as number two. So, or find a way to get a better connection with Darnell Mooney or utilize Anthony Miller better. But it's going to come down to a close contest. It will be close, I think, throughout. Chicago has a path. The back end of the season is, in theory, easier opponents. But then you still look at other teams like Minnesota on the rise. Obviously, Detroit barely lost to Chicago back in week one. Houston isn't going to go away. Deshaun Watson still exists over there with the Texans, and you have to play Green Bay. But looking at Minnesota in particular to start things off and trying to kick yourself back in the right direction, you use the same formula you did against Tennessee. Go in there, try and shut down Cook, and force Cousins to win the game for you. And then somehow find a way on offense to generate points. That's all I got for you there, Will. You know, I don't have much answers on the offensive side. Defensive side, they just need to take the same game plan they had last week, in my opinion.
Honestly, I think the game against the Vikings is going to be pretty similar to this past week against Tennessee. Because, you know, Ryan Tannehill didn't beat the Bears. I didn't really expect them to, because the Bears have been elite in terms of pass defense. Rushing the ball, or rushing defense, they've been a little shaky at times, but I was impressed. I have no complaints with the way they contained Derrick Henry. I also think that it comes down to essentially the same two keys I would have had last week against, right now it's still this week, but a couple of days ago against Tennessee, is stop their running attack and offensively just score as many points as possible. And I don't want to see any cutesy plays in this big, wow, we're going for it on fourth and one, fourth and five, because we're, you know, on our own 10-yard line. If you're in field goal range, kick the damn ball. Because Cairo Santos has been stellar this year. He hasn't missed a kick since the beginning of the season almost. So you don't have kicking woes, which is amazing. I love that. I am totally 110% confident in Cairo Santos. There's no reason not to be. And I think at the moment, he's probably kicked Eddie Pinheiro out of his job for good here in Chicago. That's what I personally think. So kick the damn ball if you're on the 20-yard line, 30-yard line. I don't care. I don't want to go for fourth and one. I don't care if we get 8 field goals and that's how we win the game. Kick the ball, get the points on the board since you're struggling, and stop Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook probably will have a good game in terms – just because, I mean, Kirk Cousins has proven that he can't win against the Bears. He's been pretty bad against this defense over the last 2 years. I kind of expect it to happen again. We'll see what happens, because the defense, if they're out there nonstop, they're going to be tired. But truly, I think, Zach, at the end of the day – and I'm going to probably kick myself later for saying this, because I'm giving myself false hope. I think the Bears sneak through this game next week and win 20-17. It's going to be close. It's going to be low scoring. We're going to celebrate because the Bears got the 20 points. But if the Vikings are to be winning this game or staying in this game, it's going to be because of Dalvin Cook. There's enough proof to look back on for me to say confidently that I'm not that worried about Kirk Cousins. They got Adam Thielen, they got Justin Jefferson, who have, you know, are two really good receivers. Thielen hasn't been that elite this year. Jefferson's had a couple of good games, not bad for being a rookie, but this Bears defense has been great in pass coverage. Just as long as Dalvin Cook doesn't go off for 150-plus yards, the Bears are definitely going to have a chance. But just score whenever possible, even if it's field goals at this point. We're getting desperate here. So, Zach, last thing I want to talk about, because I think it's important to mention this, that actually a couple hours ago, before we even sat down to record this podcast, the NFL came out with an announcement stating that if, for whatever reason, they're not able to do a full season because of the coronavirus, you know, the COVID concerns, which there's a lot of cases popping up again throughout the league today here or this week, unfortunately. If they can't complete a full 16-game, 17-week schedule, they will just add another playoff team. So right now, you know, they already changed the format for good. It's now 7 teams make the playoffs. But if they can't play a full season, they will just tack on another team per conference. So 8 teams in the AFC and the NFC. The Bears are in 7th place regarding wins in the NFC. But in terms of playoff positioning, they're in 8th, because the stupid Eagles in the NFC least division are 3-4-1, but they're the leader in the NFC East, and obviously whoever wins the division automatically goes to the playoffs. So the Bears, 5-4, still not in a bad spot. However, Zach, do you think with this schedule that's left, and let me pull it up here because I got it right here, got Minnesota, Green Bay, Lions, the Texans, Minnesota again, Jacksonville, and the Packers. Not a horrible stretch of games, but it's a little concerning because we know how bad this offense has been for the Bears. Do you think they find a way to make the playoffs, especially with the fact that the playoffs are expanded this year, whether it's to 8 teams or it stays at 7?
Ah, man, I want to say they can. Even with the 2 losses to Green Bay, I still think you should be able to get to 10-6 with how you started out. But the offense, man, every time I just expect the lowest common denominator and it becomes lower. But I think what we'll get is a gauge here with the game against Minnesota come Monday night. If they can beat Minnesota, then I say my prediction of 10-6 will be correct. Because if you can beat Minnesota, in my opinion, you can pull off and sweep Detroit and sweep Minnesota as well. And I think you would then be able to have enough talent to take over Jacksonville. Houston, I think, also is a winnable game because their defense is that poor. But, you know, I will have to see how the season progresses. And I also would kind of hope that Matt Nagy changes away from play calling. I think it's winnable. And I think you're able to get to 10-6, which even with the 7 in the 7 per conference, I think they would make it to a wild card berth just with that alone. If it's non COVID related, if it is 8, I think they still can make it. Again, it's going to come down to, in my opinion, you know, can you win the games that are basically not Green Bay? And heck, if you can steal one against Green Bay, and I'm saying if heavy, then I think that you can make it to a wild card spot. Really, this is a winnable schedule, Will. And honestly, if they would have beaten New Orleans, I would have felt even more confident. If they would have pulled it off in overtime, I would have felt more confident about this. But now, you know, just how poor it has been overall against these last 3 opponents, and just Minnesota at least showing like they have some life, that's what's got me worried. But there's a path, Will. There is a path. I'm going to say they have a shot with both formats that they can get to the playoffs and make a wild card seed.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think if something happens, I hope this doesn't happen, but I know it's still going to be more ideal for the Bears probably, is that if something happens where there's a week canceled because of COVID, I believe that the Bears can make the playoffs in that 8th and final spot. I think if they are to make the playoffs, even when it's still the 7-game playoff format, I think it's going to be if they get the 7th and final spot, which is still going to be tough because right around where the Bears are, you got the Cardinals, the Rams, again, the Eagles. They're only going to freaking make it because they're going to probably be the division winner, which, I mean, still could be somebody else too. I mean, the Giants and Washington, well, actually, Washington, Dallas, and New York all have 2 wins still. So, I mean, they're technically only 1 game back of the Eagles. But either way, whatever team leads that division still makes it. So, essentially, the Bears are battling with the Rams and the Cardinals. And the 49ers are still in there, too, at 4-5. But with all these injuries, I don't expect them to win many games. So, I think the Bears may still sneak into the playoffs, but a lot of things have to happen right. And that's ideally beating the Vikings twice, beating the Lions again. Because remember, Minnesota and Detroit, 3-5, you know, 2 games back of the Bears, not only in terms of wins, but also, again, placement in the division, too, and within the NFC. So you don't want them to surpass you. I mean, look, the Vikings being 3-5, if you hand them 2 more losses, that already gets them to 7 losses. And how often does a 9-7 team make the playoffs? Not that often. So you would probably ruin Minnesota's playoff chances if you beat them twice. Still not buying into the Lions, though. I do fear them a little bit because they're putting up some good fights. But again, you're playing them at home on December 6th. You got to beat them. The Packers, I expect to lose at least once. Maybe both times. But really, I think you find a way to beat them when they're not at Lambeau, even though crowd isn't really a factor at either stadium right now. You got to find a way to beat them once. I'm worried about the Texans because they still got a lot of offensive talent there. They're a trash team, but again, all they got to do is score a few more points than the Bears, and they probably could win that game. So that game I don't think is going to be as easy as you'd think. The best game remaining on the schedule is week 16 against the Jaguars. I mean, that 2-7 team, Gardner Minshew hype train's gone. I don't even know if he's going to be playing because he's hurt. They only have a running back, essentially, on that team that you have to worry about. So I think really Jacksonville's your easiest game left on the schedule, but that's not until December 27th, second to last week of the season. So you still got I mean, before you get to that Jacksonville game, you still got four NFC North matchups. I mean, you got to remember, too, they've only played the Lions. So they still have five out of six NFC North games remaining. So that's going to be important, too. So a lot of NFC teams here, a lot of teams are going to be battling for playoff positioning with. So anyway, Zach, thank you so much for joining again today. Another good podcast with you. Always enjoy talking to you. And, you know, hopefully next time I have you on, maybe we could talk about a win or maybe some miraculous comeback and where the Bears maybe go on a 3-game winning streak now. What do you say?
I would love that. I just go in and beat Minnesota. That's all you can say at this point. You know, start fresh. Get some positive vibes back in that locker room because, man, they really need it.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, thank you, Zach, for coming on again today. And everybody, be sure to check out Gridiron Gallery, all the great content that Zach does on a weekly basis. So thank you for listening, everybody. And we'll have some more Bears coverage coming up here in the coming weeks and trying to work on some guest booking to get some hockey talk here with the Blackhawks and deal with that mess coming up soon, too. So anyways, thanks again, Zach. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to Windy City Sports Talk. You can find more episodes on Anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Until next time, be well.